All right. Welcome, everyone, to the Integral Christian Network podcast. I'm Luke Healy, co-founder of Integral Christian Network, along with our co-host, David Pinkston. And today we're here talking with Dean Stilo, who's a friend of mine and someone that I've met through this this thing called the New Contemplative Community Creators Network. That's a mouthful of a name, but it's folks who are meeting up together because we're sharing in this work of creating new communities, of bringing together new spaces for the spiritual life to unfold and to evolve ahead. So I'm really excited to talk with Dean today. And I'm not a big like bio intro person. Here's all the credentials. But I was looking at some of the stuff, Dean, that you have on your website. And I really liked this phrase. And so I'll introduce you this way, that Dean's passion is to help people reorient around the active present help of divine love while discovering the sacredness of their own life, the life of others, and creation itself. So that's a beautiful expression, Dean. And yeah, welcome. Glad to have you here for conversation.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here with you, and I so appreciate the work that you're doing, and excited to just to be a part of this conversation. So thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And I love the work you're doing, and we're going to talk about that. And what it's called is Reorient, or Reorient Collective. And I want to start there because that phrase reorient implies an orientation and maybe a disorientation. That we're reorienting to something is a process. And so let's start with you just telling us a little bit about your journey, and maybe how you became disoriented and what you needed to go on in this reorienting deal. So let's begin there.
Well, let's start first with maybe your original orientation and just quick form, and then what led to that disorientation, and how you came out of that or are coming through that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to start real early. I promise it won't take too long. But so I brought up in the independent Baptist world. So if you don't know what independent Baptist is, just think of the Southern Baptist and take a right, and then think of the militia and take a left, and we're probably somewhere right there. You know, like we weren't in the militia, but we knew some people that were probably in the militia, that type of thing. It was really very, you know, deep fundamentalism, very strict, a lot of rules. Went to a Christian school my whole life, my school life. And, always had a sense within that, as kind of messed up as I kind of look back on it now and see that a lot of it was, it was also beautiful. There was a lot of good things that happened in that I'm very grateful for. But while it introduced me to my understanding of God and the divine, there was a sense as I grew up and I started having a sense that I'd like to be a part of this. Have a, you know, what we used to call to preach back then, you know, I knew something was up. I could just tell that something wasn't working. As I read the Gospels, I read Jesus and read, you know, just, I don't think we're selling what Jesus was selling. I don't know. This doesn't seem right. And then I started seeing people that, that were the leaders, you know, having just kind of breaking down in their life, and their marriages aren't working, and they're struggling with addictions and different things. And I'm like, you know, this doesn't seem to be effectively transforming, you know. And there was just, I don't know, there was just something about it. And so, got married when I was 21. And my wife, I met her in high school, and she comes from that same background. And really over the next 20 years being in ministry, it was just a journey into new things, exploring kind of eclectic evangelicalism for a while there. You know, we were Episcopalians for a bit, and Vineyard, and Pentecostal, and Baptist, and, you know, and everything in between. Yeah, so always had a sense that the foundation of this thing was good. But that was that 20-year process was obviously a lot of reorienting around the way we were thinking about things and changing. And then in my late 30s, I hit a wall. I was in a church plant, kind of a Rick Warren style church plant. And we were number 11 on Outreach magazine, you know, and I was on stage for four services a weekend leading these, you know, kind of the best show in town, best Jesus show in town kind of thing, and doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. And I'm just empty. Like, it's just not working for me. And I'm burning out. I got six kids at home. Obviously I'm in a church plant, so we're not making any money and going into debt. And my soul, was just empty. And it was really frustrating for me because I was doing what I knew to do. Right. And I'm a seven on the Enneagram. So sevens on the Enneagram, you know, we're reframing everything. So people ask me, are you stressed? I'm like, no, I'm fine. You know, everything's great, but I'm having panic attacks. Right. And so I remember reading around that time I read Rob Bell's Velvet Elvis had come out. And I remember him just talking about, when do you look out the window? You know, when are you a human being and not just a human doing? And I realized that most of my understanding of faith and life, was really just really focused on doing. And, I was so unfamiliar with anything contemplative or mystical, at that point, other than a little bit of the charismatic stuff, which was very externally focused, you know? Yeah. And so, over the next 10 years, I started getting introduced to, some contemplative practices, you know, centering prayer. I started doing silent retreats, doing all this stuff. And it revolutionized everything in my life. I mean, the biggest thing was that what I was experiencing in these practices, I went deep into myself, was kind of messing with some of my doctrines that I held, right? And the thing was, is I started trusting that experience of those things more than these friends because they were contrary. And I knew something deeper in my soul that was different than what the frame was telling me to stay in line with.
Could you give us an example that you're comfortable with that explains what you're saying? Because Luke and I might have our own stories of that, but we'd love to hear an example of that from you.
Yeah. You know, I think I started going to the mountains for like long periods of time, and I didn't have a spiritual director. I didn't even know what a spiritual director was when I started this thing. But I remember going to the mountains and be there for like 6-7 days, completely unplugged, not talking to anybody, just trying to be quiet. And I remember that all of a sudden, every once in a while, I'd have these moments of like what we now would call like a unitive moment and you experienced the way things actually are. Like, it was clear to me, like, this, there's something beneath the commentary, that is holding me, that is holding the frame of whatever frame I currently have. There's something deeper, and it's good. And so I remember one day I was reading, and there's this sentence that I read in a book, and it said, all relationship begins with misunderstanding. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, like I had been my entire life my understanding of what it meant to be a Christian was you had to have a certain set of understandings. And then I knew that those understandings had been evolving my entire life. And then all of a sudden I realized there's something deeper than my understandings. And so then there was this moment where I was like, wait a minute. There's no way that this good reality that I'm experiencing that's holding everything could be using my understanding or my belief system as a criteria for acceptance, because that wouldn't even be good, right? Like, how could that be possible? Like, love is holding us at every stage and every place of understanding and misunderstanding and growth, which just really messed with some doctrinal things in the church, you know, which we were saying, basically, if you check this box and believe this, then that makes you, that puts you in this category. And so my experience just kind of said, you know, it's not, yeah, it's not based in that. And, you know, it's interesting. One last thing on this. Jesus said, you'll know the truth and the truth will make you free. Right. So the word know is the word nosko. It means to experientially know. So it's the same word we use for like, you know, knowing your spouse. So it's pretty intimate. Like this is an experiential knowing. So it's not just like a head knowledge, you know, belief structure. He says, when you experientially know, and then the truth, the word truth for truth is the word aletheia, and the word aletheia means reality. Or another definition is the way things actually are. And so in essence, Jesus says in that verse, when you experience the way things actually are, it'll set you free. And so for me, it was those, I had no idea what I was doing. You know, as far as like, you know, I didn't even know what contemplation meant. When I first started, I kept reading people like Richard Rohr and Thomas Keating and these guys, and they're talking about stuff, and I had no idea what they were doing, but I just knew, I could sense the Spirit was guiding me into that. And it just created a generosity of soul that opened things up for me. And it gave me a grace for the journey. I realized, oh yeah, the whole time, when I knew people in the militia and we were thinking about not paying our taxes, like, yeah, even then, love was holding me.
Yeah. That's so good, Dean. I love that. Like, first, that affirming of the goodness in the tradition that we were birthed into, that we come out of. I mean, as problematic as it is, as limited as it is, depending on people's experience, right? Everyone's had different experiences, sure. But that's, you know, that sense of like all relationships starts in misunderstanding is so beautiful and powerful because, of course, like nothing's going to be, I have young kids and I'm kind of in this place where I'm like, oh, you know, I want them to have like the perfect expression of, you know, I don't want them to get enmeshed in things that are less than healthy and will traumatize them and blah, you know, some wrestling through that, but it's really freeing and releasing to hear that and own that and know like, oh, okay. Like it's okay if it, if it isn't the right, quote unquote, right expression, from the outset, and just honoring, that's something that we strongly affirm is right. Honoring the stages of faith and how those express in different forms. So I really appreciate you naming that, but then also too, the element of how we move through from that place of misunderstanding is not necessarily always a mental process of coming to better understandings. And I see that a lot where, you know, it's like we're deconstructing this belief and that belief and, you know, we're learning and engaging our rational faculties to come to, you know, to see things differently. And those are all really important processes. But there's also something that is, as I heard you describing, a little bit deeper than this sort of continual doing of the mental activity of trying to come to correct understanding, right? And you talked about going to the mountains and you talked about human being versus human doing and not really knowing what you were doing. I love you've mentioned to me before, and I'd wonder if you'd share like your first contemplative practice. I think it was at a Starbucks.
Oh yeah.
If I remember correctly. So that's sort of a good illustration of of this way of just like breathing into the space of going deeper. Could you share about that?
Sure. Well, this was back when I was, again, I'm, you know, the evangelical worship leader, and I'm, you know, hitting the wall, and I'm burnt out, and got all this stuff going on. And I had one day off. So I have six children and a wife at home. I have one day off. And then I'm looking at this idea of Sabbath, right? And I remember Rob Bell was talking about that in the book. And I remember just thinking about it. I'm going, okay, when the hell am I supposed to have a Sabbath, right? Yeah. You know, I work on the weekends, all weekend. But I had one day. And I knew that it just wasn't working. So I said to my wife, I said, babe, can I go and have 4 hours of Sabbath? My day off was on a Thursday. And I said, could I just go and sit for like 3-4 hours and try to be this thing that he's talking about, be a human being and not a human doing, right? So she goes, yeah, I guess. Well, yeah, it's fine. You know. So
God bless her.
God, I have the best wife in the world, man. She's amazing. But so she lets me do that. And so I go over to Starbucks. Well, then, you know, I'm in this Starbucks in the middle of New Tampa, which is like on this main road, and there's just tons of people there. And I'm like, how am I supposed to? I don't know, you know. So I got some earphones, and I found White Noise. This was, you know, and I just found some White Noise, and I put White Noise in my ears, and I found the best place that I could find, which was this corner place in the Starbucks that had two windows. And actually, believe it or not, this was the most like private place, but it was, I still had the cars going by from the drive through, right? So I would sit there and I would just, this was my goal for 3 hours every week. I would try to just look out the window. That was it. I just want to look out the window. Cause that's what, you know, that's what said Rob. Rob said, when do you just look out the window? It's like, okay, so I'm going to try this. So honestly, like Luke, I'm sitting there and I feel like an idiot at first. And then even after like a few weeks doing it, but then I started to notice, you know what, nothing else, this is calming me down a little bit. And this is helping me. And it was creating something in me that I, you know, I didn't know. It was reordering some things, I guess. And after a couple of months doing this, I'm sitting there one day and I'm just there, and there's this little grassy, it's almost like a weed, and it's in this little like garden next to the curb while the cars are going by through the drive through. And I'm sitting there and I look down and there's this little grass, and it's sitting there, and the wind is blowing through the grass. And in that moment, I started to weep. And something cracked open in me. And I was like, I got done with that. And look, I'm like, what was that? You know, I'd never experienced anything quite like that before. But it was a sense of, it was the first, since I was a child, that I had felt this connection with nature. Because, you know, in our religious culture of evangelicalism, you were taught to be like, okay, that sunsets the glory of God, but it's just theoretically like something, but you're not really supposed to connect to it, right? With it, to sense your connection with it. That was, now we're starting to get a little outside the frame here. And so, that was the first experience that really said, hey, there's more going on in here. So that was a great moment for me. Introduced me to something.
That's beautiful. I love the spaciousness of that makes space for being to come forth, and how that is a process. It doesn't just like happen. We have to And the kind of form of that I can really relate to with from the evangelical world, where there wasn't a context for that, right? Contemplation, like you said, I didn't really know what that meant or how to do that. And in my own story, I can relate to some of that, those early attempts where it's like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm doing something, right? I'm trying to open up to that in some kind of mystical or contemplative way. And we find our way, but people, you know, I think I know from your story too, a lot of that was finding it on your own, reading books, right? You know, connecting with some leaders out there. I don't know if that was relational or more just on your own, you know, because that space of navigating this terrain through those sorts of experiences is often lonely, right? And hard to connect with others who are so that reorienting that process of making our way through and kind of fumbling along by ourselves is I think an experience that a lot of people could maybe relate to. Or when you're in that place, you're disoriented, right? You're looking for how do I find the way forward? And so maybe that ties into some of the work that you're doing. But first, before we get there, maybe if you want to share a little bit about what that has looked like for you, how you found community or some collectives, or did you just have to create it? How did that unfold in your life?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, you know, you touched on something that really resonates with me. You said, you know, it can be lonely. So in the context, and here I am, I was a pastor in these, you know, pretty conservative evangelical churches while I'm kind of going through this deconstruction of some things and an introduction to an experience of God that was changing things. And in the process of that, I didn't even know about spiritual direction really at the beginning. I heard about it. I remember talking to someone about it, and this friend of mine said, "You know, is that like what is that like? Is that like a Buddhist thing?" Like they had no idea what any you know tradition within the Christian tradition of that. And and that was certainly true with me. But I didn't know where to go to find someone like that. So I ended up doing a lot of this work in the beginning for about a decade by myself. And I was really just experimenting with my own soul and growth. I was doing some therapy as well, you know, just working on some stuff for myself, but, just had it just in the same way I had a sense when I'm in my 20s that following Jesus could be more generous than what we were doing. It was that same kind of the path just kept leading me forward. And so I just kept doing it. But man, Luke, it was incredibly lonely at times. And I really longed for a mentor. I would knock on doors. It just never kind of happened. And so I did a lot of this stuff. Just trying it out, which I think it did really shape the work I'm doing. Because the first thing that I really wanted to do was, as I began to sense about seven, 8 years into this process, that this was the future of what I wanted to do with my life. Like I felt like something was shifting, something was changing, even within the Christian household. In the world, there's a shift happening and all these people are walking away from faith. And, you know, like you could tell there's something, and I knew I wanted to do it. And as I was thinking about that, I thought, you know, at first I just wanted to start meeting with people and letting them know that they're safe and they're loved and they're not alone. And it's okay, you know, that you're having these, you know, these questions and these struggles and, yeah, you're all right. You're okay. And just to give that presence that I didn't have anybody, you know, and in a way, divine love became that presence for me, like, cause I was alone. And, but yeah, it definitely shaped Reorient and what we're doing today for sure.
A lot of the times when we start to make breakthroughs, Dean, is we start to, and you've leaned into this in telling your story, but we start feeling the freedom to ask a different set of questions out of truth or reality, as you shared mm-hmm. from the Greek. I have often translated that as self-disclosure. In other words, reality or love or spirit plus ourselves are being unveiled in full reality, mm-hmm. where there's a self-disclosure. But in that reality, that unveiling, unfolding reality, in that process, we start to ask and start feeling the freedom, the permission, if you will, especially if we're coming out of patriarchal authority is outside us and organization is about conformity and uniformity, not diversity that creates unity, usually. We start to feel an inner permission to ask a different set of questions out of ourself or out of God or out of life or out of religion or those kinds of things, out of scriptures or whatever it is that might be those triggering events or triggering moments. And I'm wondering if you might share one or two of those moments where, you know, you're using the term reorient, which in my practice of offering spiritual direction with others, I will use the pattern orientation, disorientation, reorientation, because that happens to all of us, no matter where we're at and the movements of development. That pattern repeats itself, and usually in larger measure as we get older and more developed. So I'm curious, what were some of those key moments where you said, I'm going to ask a different set of questions. It may lead me to loneliness. I may not have the same circle of support that I once had, but I know I have to do this. What were some of those questions that you were feeling free to ask yourself or God?
You know, I remember reading Jesus, and again, back in my 20s, and going, I don't think this is freeing people. Jesus said, it's true. If you know the truth, it'll set you free. But I'm like, I don't think it's freeing me. And I don't see people kind of, and then I remember there was this verse that just arrested me. Jesus was being criticized by some people for being with sinners, I think it was, or, you know, tax collectors. And he says, wisdom is proven by its results. And I just remember going, I think that's permission to evaluate what's happening in our soul. I think Jesus, the character, is giving us permission, right? Jesus, the great clarifier, who is the incarnation of this divine, is saying to us, hey, you probably need to be thinking about this as you're moving forward. Is this freeing you? And, you know, wisdom is going to be proven by what results from it. And, you know, I think it was that journey. I remember seeing all the these leaders throughout. I've got like 15 heroes along the way that were at one point were like people that I was like, oh, this guy's a good one. This one, and then they're just, you know, then it comes out, all this stuff comes out about them. And instead of like just going, those guys are a bunch of they're a piece of crap. It was like, why isn't this working for people? Which, you know, is a question of, you know, Brian McLaren's stages of faith is probably in the complexity stage of, is this effective? Is this working? But I think that complexity stage is an important element, because at the bottom, because here's the thing, if what you and I are doing and what we're offering people is not empowering them and releasing them to be, you know, a better spouse, a better human being, if it's not creating new creation in us and inviting us into a participation in new creation, I mean, I'm not interested in it. There's still a part of this that, you know, I think we are reflections of the divine relationship. And I think there's something really beautiful about humanity in that. And I think, I don't know if that answers your question, David, but I, you know, it's like it was Jesus that gave me permission to do that. And then along the way, I remember one specific one where I had been struggling with eternal conscious torment for ever. Mm-hmm. And one day I just went, yeah, I don't think that's true anymore. I just don't, I my experience of being a father, and the disconnect between what we were saying that God is like and what we would say would make us horrible. Every person would say we would be horrible human beings if we did something like we were saying God would do. And I remember like, oh yeah, this is just, you know.
But I'm sure you didn't tell anyone about that. At least of all, you know,
yeah,
maybe a few others, right? It's I want to like just honor the courage that it takes to continue along in that owning of the questions, right? That acceptance and what you're doing in your work of making space for people to be affirmed in that process. I mean, you're living out what Jesus is inviting us to there and saying basically like, hey, it's okay that you're asking those questions. You're making space for the unknowing, for the mystery, right?
Right.
Yes. If it's not transformative, like what are we doing? But so often in that process to get to where we can be transformed, we need the spaciousness to just be in that freedom, right? And giving permission in that is such a crucial thing, and making space to bring those questions into community. Because I know that there are lots of pastors out there, people who work in churches, who have those questions within them, who are wrestling with those things.
Yeah.
But they're trapped. I mean, they can't, you know, they feel like their livelihood is connected to, I know you've gone through that, right? It's like, if I bring these things forth, if I was up, you know, on stage on Sunday and said, you know, so about this hell thing, like, you know, it's just the system doesn't make space for that. So we need other areas. We need other collectives. We need mentors. We need people who can bring those questions into community and say, it's okay. And we're seeking toward better understanding. We're seeking toward transformation, but we can't get to that until we be with the mystery, until we be with the allowing of us as human beings and not
right.
just doings and not just trying to mentally grasp and understand everything. So I just want to name that and really affirm that, because that's just beautiful and such an important part of that journey that we all have to go on, and that you had to go on mostly by yourself. Yeah. And now you're making space to do that with others.
Yeah, you know, it really gives a grace for other people on the journey too. Cause when you realize that, that understanding is not the basis of this thing, that love is the basis of this thing and love is holding you. If you can be with people at all these different stages, it creates a freedom, cause you're not trying to put them in the right space. I think that's one of the most damaging things about, can we just talk a little bit about interpretation of scripture? Can we do that for a minute?
Sure.
Yeah. So I think one of the most damaging things that the well-meaning doctrine of inerrancy, I think people meant well. They were looking for some sense of security in that. And it's a cool thing to think of, like, wow, we have this book and it just like, it's this oracle that fell out of the sky. And it's like, it all gels with itself and it agrees with itself on every point. It's like, I just remember as a kid going, I don't think that's like, I wasn't allowed to say it. And I really wasn't allowed to even think it. Like I was supposed to, you know, but I can remember thinking, does it seem like Paul is saying something different than Jesus? And does it feel like that James and Peter are saying something a little different than Paul at times? And you were like, oh, then, you know, somebody would come along with like the whoa, you know, hermeneutic that would put it all back in
the Matrix move, dodging the bullets, right?
Yeah, right, right. And, but I remember this was one of those moments that gave permission. Like it became clear to me, oh my gosh, wait, the scripture is this group of sacred texts of people who are waking up. They're wrestling with what it means to be a human being and who God is and what that relationship is like. And there's all kinds of like stages of development, right? And you just read the Psalms and you can see like, wow, this has evolved and it's not evolved. It's like there's moments of clarity, and then it's like it's also like in the mire of, you know, would you crush my enemy's heads against the stone type of thing, right? And you go, okay, so that doesn't gel with Jesus. And so there's all this stuff. And I remember the moment I realized, oh, wait a minute, they're all still figuring it out. And somehow divine love says, yeah, yeah, I'll work with that. I'll work with where the door is open and where if the door is closed, love doesn't force its own way, but is working with us, you know? And that I think that why that's important is when we understand that this is just the way it is with human beings and consciousness, we get to reflect that same holding, that same grace, that same patience, where people are, and in the same way that God has done for thousands of years with people who were waking up to better ideas and at the same time still had some pretty crappy, horrible ideas, which is probably me and you, right? We're just like that, right? We're still evolving and growing. So did that make any sense?
That's one of the things that about the scriptures that I think our insecurity at earlier stages is that we know we're going to die. We have a mortal self and it's going to die. And you need something solid to stand on and say, well, maybe I'm not going to die if I play this game right and align myself with the right deity and believe the things that I'm told to believe. And mm-hmm. one of those things is inerrancy of scripture. And right. and that insecurity ought not to be shamed or looked down upon, but to say we've right. all been there. We've all needed some sure. solid place to stand on. And, you know, I, as a tangent really quick, I remember working with some postmodernists who were, you know, totally deconstructing the Bible, stupid, and it's, right, you know, right. it's bullshit and all this stuff. And I'm like, man, I so remember thinking this too, because I was also raised with the Bible is God, you know, kind of
right, like exactly. this
blowing it way out of proportion. And I said, you know, because they use that passage from the Psalms, you know, happy is the person who dashes your babies against a rock. And I said, wait, just hang on a second. Let's do a thought experiment. I disagree with your politics. And so I'm going to take your 9-month-old up to the top of your apartment roof. And I'm not just going to drop the 9-year-old. I'm going to throw that nine-month-old straight to the ground on top of its head so that you can watch its guts spill out all over the ground. Now, I want you to be totally forgiving because you're woke. And it wasn't to defeat the person so much as to say the genius of the scriptures is it gives us permission to feel everything that we ought to be feeling when there's unjust things going on in the world.
Yeah, right.
And to be honest about yeah. wrestling with the mystery of God. And we're not, this podcast isn't necessarily about, you know, like holding up the scriptures or, but one of the things that I love about Paul's work is that he keeps refreshing the lens by which we view it so that it's allowed to be fully human.
Right.
Which is what I hear you sharing is you keep going through these various stages. And curiously, throughout this conversation, you keep bringing scriptures and Jesus in the scriptures, the way that he's portrayed as a modality by which you keep experiencing new modalities for yourself. Curiously, he gave you permission to start asking larger questions and you right. came at it through the text. And so I want to honor that. I want to say thank you for sharing it in that way. I think others might not feel comfortable doing that. And I don't know, Luca, this may be the first time we've interviewed someone where they've actually come through awakening through at least the way that you've given it to us, Dean, is that the text was part of that journey, not in a divorce from it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for honoring that. Yeah, you know, one thought that comes to my mind as we're talking about this is this principle of the way we grow is that things get established in our life. And when those get established, it's the thing. It is the thing. And then once it's established, there's a period of time with it, and then we expand. I mean, it's like addition and calculus, right? Like at the time when you're learning addition and subtraction at that stage, that's it. There is nothing else. This is what it is, man. And then at a certain point, it's like, okay, there's more here. There's more. And we have to go through those stages of things get established in our life, and then they get expanded. Just like, you know, when Jesus or in the Old Testament, when they presented the temple, and in Leviticus, it says, when you draw near to God. Well, that was what? Wait, time out. Can we draw near to God? We can do that? That was huge. And then you get established, and then you go to Jesus, and Jesus is talking about, hey, by the way, the Holy of Holies, the kingdom of God, all this, it's actually in you. You're like, whoa, wait a minute. What's he doing? You can see this continually, this particular, God establishes these things in the particular that eventually open us up to the larger reality. But we have to be in the smaller frame first. And so, yeah, so people are coming into our spaces from all these different frames.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. And those things that provide our security, that are established in our lives, whether that's scripture or tradition or family, right. I mean, there's so many things that we can put there that are part of what makes us feel safe, that are how we understand life and reality. And then that self-disclosure opens up in a deeper way, just like what happened to you in Starbucks, right?
Right.
Any other ways that can come forth. And for some people that necessarily needs to come through a harsh separation from that establishment, right? A big distance, but it doesn't have to. For others, it can come through that, right? It can come in the midst mm-hmm. of, as long as it's not totally enmeshing us or persecuting, you know, traumatizing us, or, you know, we have grace for the different ways that happens for different people. Right. But what I hear and what David was saying, affirming, is like, there is that reality in the Jesus path, right? In this evolving tradition of Christianity. And yes, we need to expand. It's not a narrow, just this, you know, don't learn from the, you know, it is open and it is integrative from other sources, but we can go through it. And that's what you're doing and have done. And it's good, you know, it makes space. And I'm sure there's people in your Reorient collective that are doing that, in a Christian way, in a totally non-Christian way, in a Buddhist way, right? Whatever it looks like, but you're listening for those people who are knocking on the door, right? Who are daring to maybe crack open the door and whisper through to the other side, like, hey, what's it like beyond this, the four walls of this little establishment that I've kind of built my nest in here and found, and maybe it's worked for me, maybe it hasn't, but right. When we get that courage to sort of, you know, open those doors or maybe dig a hole underneath the walls or crawl out through the window, whatever it looks like. That's the sort of work I think that you're doing. So tell us about, Reorient and those ways that you're helping people go on the journey, like, the journey that you have, but now in the context of community.
I started, like I mentioned, I started with doing, just one-on-one work with people. The first year we started this in 2020, which, by the way, I didn't tell you this, but I left, my job. I'd been at a church for 10 years and I just knew it was time. And we started Reorient, and my last day was March 1st of 2020, which if you remember 2020, in the month of March, we had this little thing happen.
Small thing.
Yeah. Just a small thing that happened in our world. And so, you know, all of a sudden I'm in this place where I'm in a complete career shift. And I just had a sense that there were all these folks out there that were in a similar space and just needed to know that, they were okay and they needed someone to walk with them. And I didn't really plan on starting a community. Interestingly, I just thought, I really didn't know what Reorient was going to be. I didn't even know how to find people that were deconstructing. I'm like, what do? Do you go out on Instagram and like troll them? Like, what do? Like, I don't know, you know? So I just started reaching out to and networking with different people and things. And then, in 2021, I started doing, book cohorts and taking, books like The Universal Christ, by Richard Rohr, and some books on contemplation, and started offering, you know, week by week studies to process. And it was remarkable. I mean, my gosh, it was beautiful. And I would get to the end of these times with these book cohorts, and people were going, how do we keep going? Like, what's the next book? And so I couldn't just keep, you know, I couldn't keep doing more book studies. So then I was like, well, let me see what we can do as far as creating some sort of communal reality. And so I researched for a while, and then we started the Reorient Collective in 2022, which is an online community. It's on something called a Mighty Network that is similar to Facebook, but it's a private, you know, we pay for it. And so that's kind of our hub. Some of you probably are familiar with Circle or some of those platforms that are doing the same thing. And so what we, you know, really what I do is just what we've been talking about. People come in just like, you know, David, you're a spiritual director. You, people come to you and you have this deep sense as you begin that, there's a treasure in the field of their life. Your job is not to, impart some great wisdom. It's really to help them to discover that treasure in the field, which again, we go back to Jesus. This was the primary message of Jesus. The primary message of Jesus was the kingdom of heaven is within. It's all around us. It's among us. And, yeah, so just helping people to reorient around that. And then what we do is we have, you know, spiritual practice, contemplative practice for many people, is something they either know about and they want to do, and they want to do that in community of some sort, or they have no clue about it. And or they've heard about it, but they don't know how to do it. And so what we do is we create a community around practice. I call it rehearsal. So when we go to when we do spiritual practice, life is the concert and practice is the rehearsal. And this is where we are we're in a very practical way reorienting our soul, our heart, mind, and body around the present reality of God's goodness and love within us. And again, we have lots of names for that. Different people have a lot of different names for that. I don't really care about the names. I think the truth is that we're living from this reality of this good source of our life. That is our life. And so we, in community, we're trying to build community around that. And the struggle of that becoming, that transformational becoming of that is just real, and we're not here to argue about positions. We don't approach the community from a place of taking positions on things. It's more about posture towards one another, and how do we're processing the questions we're having, but also the experiences that we're having. And I think that's really important when it comes to anything that has a label of transformational on it or spiritual, you know, it's so easy to think, oh, I'm doing this wrong, or this is, you know, putting it in some category. And it's great to be with people, with other people who are like, yeah, we just did that thing. It didn't resonate with me. And another person says, oh, it resonated with me. And we just can find that solidarity in the journey together. And I have honestly on Zoom, I have more relationships, closer relationships now than I think I've ever had in all my years of being in ministry. And that's not to, you know, belittle or put that those down. It's just there's something pretty cool about doing this work in this way that has been special, even on Zoom.
You know, I think one way that I think about orientation, disorientation, reorientation, and the work that you're doing is that the reductionistic way of kind of looking at our previous incarnations of faith, if you will, is, you know, you're creating your own image of God when God happens to reject the same people you do. I think also it's true that, you know that you're generating your own image of God when God just happens to have the same insecurities that you do. Right. And when we go through these disorientations, it doesn't end there. And this is the part about deconstruction where You know, I like to say to my friends, this is really important, but if you keep destroying the house, you're not going to have any shelter. You know, like there is something on the other side of this, this reorientation, reconstruction that like do it. Occupy that space faithfully. Explore, like do what you're supposed to do. Discover what you're supposed to discover. But there can be sometimes an inherent insecurity at that stage because, well, what do I trust? What is what is worth investing in or believing in or quote unquote having faith in, which we don't have time to unpack the fact that if there is no belief, that's a serious major belief. but you know, that disorientation is meant to break us open to a greater reality. And, I find myself lit up knowing that folks like you are out there helping to build bridges to a deeper understanding of self, of other, of God, of ultimate reality, truth, discovering our deepest and truest identity by being willing to work through the questions, even if it's lonely, even if it's frustrating, if it hurts, or if we're confused and you know, not... It's not clear. You've quoted so much scripture that I feel like I should do the same thing. I think it's in Psalm 119. I don't have a head for memorizing verses, but it says, "Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path." And I always loved that passage because there was no streetlights back then. There was no light pollution. So when a person makes this kind of statement, what they're saying is, all I can see right now is one foot in front of the other. But I can see a light over there that's drawing me closer in that direction. And I think of the work of your doing as being something like this. Like, well, let me help you just know where you are. Let me help you as you discover where you are in this path that you may not be able to see all around you. But trust me, there is a great light that is drawing you closer towards the light.
Yeah. I love that. That is so good. I was thinking as you were saying that, you know, part of the journey has been being introduced to an understanding of Jesus that that didn't cross out all the other traditions, but actually you know, honored and even validated. And you know, there's this thing that in the beginning of John, you know, the prologue there where he says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God, and all things were made by him. Without him was not anything made that was made. And then he says this little thing, he says, and in him was light. And the light was the light of men, of human beings. And so this word that is this conversation, this divine conversation that was happening in the word was incarnated in Jesus. And he says that what the physical Jesus is incarnating is the light of men. Well, when? When was it the light of men? Since the beginning. It always has been. So what we're talking about when we talk about what Jesus is representing is this light that is guiding us. Just like you were saying, the word is a light into my path. Like, yeah, it's not, you know,
yeah. And that's the treasure in the field. I mean, that's
right.
It's within, right. It's within. That's where
it's not a Christian thing.
It's not a Christian thing. I want to bring in a poem as we're quoting scripture. It's like, you know, out beyond right and wrong, there is a field. I'll meet you there. Yes, and that came to mind as you were describing the way you discuss in your community. And it's like, okay, that's where the field is. It's beyond this establishment, right? I was using the metaphor of like a building or a house. We go out into the field. We go out into nature. We go into incarnated reality and the divine presence in that. That might be beyond our established built structures of security. And we find that treasure within. And that's what you're doing. You're helping people find that treasure. You're gathering in the field. It's not about right or wrong. It's not about, you know, particular sets of understanding, but it's about the path of love and being together, as I've heard you describing it. And that's so beautiful, Dean. I'm so grateful for you as a friend, as a brother, and the work that you're doing. Tell people about where they can find your work. What's the best way to kind of look into seeing what you're doing?
Yeah. Well, if you are looking for spiritual mentoring, spiritual direction, you go to reorientmentoring.com and you can find information there and contact me and we can connect. The other thing is our community is called the Reorient Collective, just reorientcollective.com. And it's life-giving space for evolving faith is what Reorient Collective is about. And so we'd love to, love to have you and come check us out.
Beautiful. Thanks, Dean. It's been a pleasure and wonderful to be in conversation with you today. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And thank you guys for doing the work you're doing. We need a million of us out there doing the same work, inviting people into more generous understandings of what it means to be a human being. So thanks for doing the work you're doing.
Yeah, thank you.